They say the quickest way to become a millionaire is to start as a billionaire and then launch an airline. Aviation is a high-stakes game. Huge costs, razor-thin margins, and timing that can make or break you. Even the best-funded startups, led by seasoned pros, can be knocked out by a sudden market shift or a run of bad luck. The airline industry is a roller coaster, brutal, cyclical, and endlessly unpredictable. And the turbulence isn't limited to the scrappy newcomers. Legacy carriers, those household name giants, ride the same wild waves. Surviving the dips is all about staying lean enough to weather the lull and nimble enough to cash in when demand roars back. For the airlines, it's not just about filling seats. Airlines face a cocktail of moving parts that can make or break the bottom line. Take fuel. It's the single biggest expense, often close to 30% of the total costs, and its price swings like a pendulum. One bad month at the pump can wipe out a year of careful planning. Next up is something that few passengers ever even think about: depreciation and amortization. Airplanes and engines are insanely valuable assets, and their book value drops every year. Many airlines sidestep some of that pain by leasing jets instead of owning them outright, but lease payments are still a massive fixed cost. Then, there's maintenance and overhaul, another heavy hitter roughly at 8 to 10% of expenses. Add that to the flight crew salaries and benefits, also 8 to 10%, and you see the delicate dance. Pay enough to attract and keep world-class pilots and crews, but stay lean enough to survive the next downturn. The rest, station operations, ground handling, marketing, training, regulatory compliance, makes up the other half of the bill. They're not optional, and you can't cut your way out of them. At Nomadic, our bread and butter is moving leased aircraft, bringing new jets into the airlines when the leases begin, and pulling others out when leases end. Our fortunes are tied directly to the ebb and flow of global airline economics, but probably not in the way you'd first imagine. When the market is ramping up, business is as you'd expect. Plenty of deliveries and lease returns that keep us busy. And when the airlines are running in flat-out boom times, short on pilots, we step in to ferry their aircraft to and from maintenance so their own crews can stay focused on revenue flights. Here's the twist. When the cycle is ramping down, we can be just as busy. Sometimes even busier, flying aircraft into storage or handling involuntary lease terminations, which is the polite term for repossessions. In short, Nomadic thrives on the ramps. Upturn or downturn, instability is our playground. But when the industry hits a long, level stretch of equilibrium, that's when things really slow down for us.
Starting in maybe summer of 2024, everything just kind of like died off.
Yeah.
And like we went from doing 350 trips a year to doing like 100, kind of like overnight.
The past year has been one of the quietest we've seen. Mid-2024 marked the tail end of the post-COVID surge, and now by late 2025, we're staring at the first signs of a real downturn. That plateau was expected, but it was sharpened by a perfect storm. Persistent Neo GTF engine troubles, production delays at both Boeing and Airbus, and global uncertainty driven by a tariff war.
And the big reason for that is like kind of multifold, right? Like for one, Pratt & Whitney GTF engines, those coming out of service, all the airlines basically extended leases on their midlife airplanes that would be coming out of service.
Yeah, it's like a handful of different issues that are all hitting at the same time.
Yeah, and then, you know, according to my conversations with the lessors, most of them Irish-based, you know, the big uncertainty has been with the tariffs.
Yeah,
so definitely. Just because it's been so unstable, like one day it's this, one day it's that, nobody knows. What they're saying is, until very recently, that uncertainty has led to a lot of just, let's just wait and see.
So we pivoted. Our focus shifted toward engine leasing and part-out work, particularly on midlife narrow bodies coming out of China. 737-700s, A319s, and A321ceos. These jets may have fallen off the most wanted list for passenger service, but their engines and systems share DNA with the hot-ticket 737-800, 900, and A320ceo fleets. And with MAX and NEO deliveries constrained, those parts suddenly became gold.
That's funny.
First leg around the world, Newark, Tokyo.
At the end of 2024, we kicked off a multi-ship project on behalf of one of our clients, an engine lessor purchasing A319s and 737-700s from several Chinese airlines for the engines and APUs.
Not terrible, Shanghai Airlines with it closing cabins.
The block of airplanes were scattered around China in a few different cities, Harbin, Shanghai, Guangzhou, Tianjin, and Urumqi. And last December, Pat and I set out to Harbin to move the first one. I'd never been there before, so I was eager to jump on it. Located way up north between Siberia and North Korea, it was not an easy place to get to. Our ride began in Newark, New Jersey, with stops in Tokyo, Hong Kong, and Shanghai, and it would take over 24 hours to get there.
So we arrived here in Harbin like 45 minutes ago. It's freezing. It's minus 23.
We got a good night's sleep, and I woke up bright and early to meet Pat for breakfast and to try to find something that would serve as catering for the first leg.
It's 6:15. We go get breakfast and then come back up.
Honestly, as much as I rag on China, the hotels, at least the Western brands that we frequent, are pretty great. I wasn't disappointed by the JW Marriott, and the breakfast spread was really good. Of course, it had its share of oddities like any eatery in China, but it also had plenty of regular stuff for our uncultured American palates.
What did you have for breakfast, Juan?
I don't even know.
Yeah. Was it some sort of fungus on some sort of fermented pear fungus?
And yeah, we'll see if it kills me later.
Well, that's not going to kill you. It's the catering that we had them prepare from the buffet that's going to kill you.
Possibly the one in India.
Yeah, well, that one is definitely going to at least clean us out.
I don't know about killed, but I ordered a lot of authentic Indian food and we're landing up in Calcutta, which I've never been to.
Got our catering for the first leg. It's two sandwiches and two croissants. It's not a lot.
It really has that Siberia feel to it. And we missed the ice festival by like a week, so it's kind of unfortunate. Google Harbin Ice Festival. It's unbelievable. It's worth seeing. Maybe someday. This is the closest I've ever come.
I've done a lot of ops to Siberia prior to the sanctions, and I couldn't believe how much Harbin looks more like Russia than China. Unexpected and pretty wild.
All right, you ready? Here we are. Harbin.
Okay. Look at those columns, man. It is friggin' cold out here.
Absolutely freezing. It does give me these flashbacks to when we used to come to Siberia all the time.
Different aircraft types fall in and out of favor with market conditions is mind-boggling. This airplane was a beauty, and here we were taking her on one last adventure across the globe before she stripped for parts and left out in a field in the Welsh countryside. It's sad, but it's the circle of life.
I haven't even done any of this yet.
A good time to...
Yeah, I ran through everything. I'm so excited.
Did the fire test.
Yeah.
And he was already on. That was all that we got in, obviously. Otherwise, it would be fucking cold.
Part-out locations and facilities are selected by the aircraft's owner based on a slew of variables. Cost, destination for the engines, which can be quite costly to ship, tax advantages, relationships with facilities, consignment options. I don't know everything that goes into it, but these places are all over the world. And our clients just tell us where to drop the planes off, and we do it.
Okay, copy. We have information X-ray with 1025 QNH. We are cleared to Victor Echo Charlie Charlie via flight plan route, planning runway 23 right, Cape Cup, 19 Delta departure, and full squawk 1220, climb and maintain 900 meters.
cool down to 100 meters.
Copy. Initial climb 900 meters.
Cruising level 1,000 meters. QH 1025.
Okay, copy. Our initial climb 900 meters. Cruising is 1,000 meters.
This batch of jets were split between the U.S. and the U.K. Some went to Coolidge, Arizona and Brunswick, Maine, and some went to St. Athan just outside of Cardiff, Wales, where our destination on this 319 was out of Harbin. Our route of flight, Kolkata, India, Muscat, Oman, where we'd overnight, Cairo, Egypt, and then St. Athan. The westbound route to Europe is permit-heavy, and the process went into motion about 7 days before we arrived on site, much less so for the U.S.-bound jets heading out over the Pacific. We got the door closed up and strapped in for the first leg. Flight time would be a little over 6 hours, and the route would take us southeast to overfly Beijing, then south to Wuhan, and west-southwest across Myanmar, Bangladesh, and into northeastern India. It was a beautiful day along the entire route, and I ensured the cameras were all locked and loaded.
Avern Control, Oscar Mike Delta 405. We're at stand 313 for engine start.
Yeah,
no,
Red Bull. Vitamin Freva drink.
Pat would fly this leg and I'd work the radios. I tend to have the up-and-coming pilots fly out of China, and I opt to talk because it can be tough to understand the accents and deal with the less standard meters altitude assignments and slightly different verbiage. Though not super busy, Harbin is quite a large airport and the taxi was quite long. So often, departing China, we blast off at night because most major airports have late-night time windows for ferry flights. Not the case with Harbin, and I was looking forward to a westbound trip that chases the sun.
All
right, man, your flight controls. Clear for takeoff.
We actually timed our departure to try to assure the whole first day was under daylight, but a slight delay in both Harbin and India meant the sun would end up setting around top of descent into Muscat.
Rudder set. 80 knots. V1.
Rotate.
1-0-9-0-5, Oscar Mike Delta 405 today. Harbin departure, Nomadic 405, climbing 700 meters for 900 meters.
That's 0.
Okay, climb and maintain 1,800 meters.
Nomadic 405.
Sorry, man, I can only do like so many things at once here.
Yeah, no worries.
As we push southwest toward Beijing, we watch the frozen white snowscape below taper off into the brown barren flats of Inner Mongolia, then morph into the Yentan Mountains before passing over the capital city. We climbed to 11,000 meters, which is 36,000 feet, and then requested a step climb up to 11,600 meters, 38,000 feet, to get a little lower fuel consumption out of the engines. At some point along the way, I came to the realization that I was roasting to death in the long johns and a thermal shirt that I had on underneath my jeans, so I headed into the cabin to remove some layers. I also grabbed one of the better cameras and a couple of longer lenses. Daytime flights in clear sky seem to be a rarity lately, and I thought it would be a good opportunity to get some of the footage of the scenery. I've been trying to find a good balance when packing camera gear that's light enough to avoid checking bags, but sophisticated enough to get the shots that I want. I carried a ton of gear on this one, all to be foiled on leg one by dirty windows.
We're up at 38,000 now. Just over flying Beijing. Been in the air for about an hour and a half out of Harbin, so we're just hitting Beijing, and I've been trying to find good camera angles. We're doing like unhealthy eating, Bob style.
There you go.
We also have baby back rib flavor, which we've already had from the middle. It's really good. And we have a
cucumber.
Still pickle, I think. But it tastes like cucumber more than pickle. It's good, I like it.
Better than those sandwiches in the back.
Yeah.
Couple hours in and my stomach was growling. I questioned my decision to self-cater from the hotel. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but I really should have at least picked up some better snack food from the terminal on our way out to the plane. The goodie bag of junk food and chips from the handlers turned out to be clutch, but I was really hoping for an Indian miracle with catering on the coming tech stop. I prayed it would at least be edible, because chips and junk food wasn't going to cut it on a full day of chasing the sun westbound across the entire continent of Asia. The unrefrigerated hotel sandwiches were definitely an emergency-only break-glass situation. There was a lot of risk riding on the food quality of the India stop, a reality I tried not to think about. Would the fairy gods come through? It's a question I ask myself at least once per trip.
All right, 1273 or 1207. Copy that, Nomadic.
At the 6-hour mark, we transitioned into Indian airspace and started the arrival planning. There wouldn't be any actual weather to speak of, but the surface visibility was less than a mile because of thick smog and haze, so we'd be shooting an instrument approach into the north runways at Kolkata.
Oscar Mike Delta 405 descending for level 190 for 140. Oscar Mike Delta 405 for the radar identified. Cleared Hotel arrival. You are a 201.
Like most of the Indian airports I've experienced, the airspace was also packed with arrivals and departures, and the radios weak and congested. The temperature was well over 90 degrees Fahrenheit on the ground, a sharp contrast to the sub-zero temps we had just departed out of earlier in the day.
All right, descend at flight level 080, Nomadic 405. Let's keep descending on the SID.
Yeah.
We were assigned a VOR approach into one left, somewhat archaic non-precision approach that only provides lateral guidance and requires higher ceilings and visibility than an ILS. It's traditionally based on a physical VOR station on the ground, but the Airbus uses its internal GPS to simulate its location for better accuracy. With no nav database for India, I jumped into action building the arrival and approach from scratch in the MCDU. I wasn't expecting a non-precision approach, so all the preparations I made during cruise were useless.
So I get 405, descend to flight level 60, reduce speed to 180 knots.
Send to 60, speed 180 knots, Oscar Mike Delta 405.
All the Airbus pilots watching right now probably think I'm being dramatic, but hear me out. At the airlines, the sophisticated Airbus flight management logic makes arrival and approach planning and setup a mindless breeze. But that technology inversely complicates the process for ferry crews and requires thousands of button presses to configure the nav systems to guide the aircraft down to the asphalt.
Woo, look at that, man.
1,000.
Dance. Phi Bravo what?
JK Phi Bravo. It's like in the middle of the runway.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's way the hell about it.
Bravo one, report following you to the side.
A left turn?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
But right.
I'd never been to Kolkata before, and it looked like pretty much exactly what I expected. We taxi to a remote stand out by an old, possibly defunct cargo facility next to a bunch of engineless, dust-covered, flightless birds, idly parked in a place where they'd be out of the way. In other words, our normal surroundings. There seemed to be some sort of confusion on the ground when we arrived, because for 10 minutes the ground handlers were just kind of staring at us and not bringing the stairs to the airplane. Normally when this happens, it's because I forgot to turn off the red flashing beacon, a universal sign that it's safe to approach the airplane, but in this case, I didn't forget, so we took it upon ourselves as the first order of business to clean the outside of the cockpit windows, something I wish I'd remembered to do in China. If we were in a 787, a Dash 8, a 747, or something with a cockpit egress hatch, we'd be screwed for the whole trip with dirty windows. But the A320, much like almost every other airliner, has a sliding egress window which we can open in order to escape a fire or other nightmare scenario, or to simply wipe down the window glass.
Damn, you can reach further than me.
At 5'9", a thorough cleaning means hanging more than half of my body out the window, from a height that would really suck to fall from. Taller people like Pat are way better built for this task.
That was fabulous. 5'3". Nice work.
Eventually, the stairs were moved into position, and I headed outside to have a look at the jet, chat up the ramp crew, and enjoy a short break from the monotony of the office. One leg to go until rest in Muscat, we were both eager to get back in the air, and after loading the catering, I caught a whiff of the food and quickly developed high hopes for our upcoming in-flight meal. The leg between Kolkata and Muscat was a bit shorter than the last 4 hours and 20 minutes, and we'd fly under a perpetual sunset as we traversed the entire country of India and then the Arabian Sea, just reaching Oman after dark.
We go.
Let's do it.
set. Just keep to left.
God, this thing is power.
100. And it does.
Woo.
D1 for a D.
Pass climb.
You're up.
Jumps off the ground.
Good lord, man. It says 27,000 pound engines. I must admit, I'm kind of excited about our catering. I really like Indian food. I mean, who knows how good it's going to be, but we got some authentic stuff. So, all right, we got chicken butter masala paneer burji. We got moong dal paneer butter masala, another one of those. Paneer paratha, that's like the bread, I guess, with cheese, and then plain.
Other than the chips, it had been over 10 hours since our last meal, so even some average catering would have been the highlight of our day. But once the foil tops came off the trays, I knew this wasn't going to be average. This was a best-case scenario. This was exciting.
Oh, yeah, so that doesn't look too bad. What you got? Want to trade a bread for a bread? One piece of bread would have been enough to get me through, honestly. Instead, we've got... What's that?
It's the... Near...
Burji? It looks fucking good.
Yep.
That looks excellent.
It smells good. It smells really good.
It all smells really good. I'm actually excited about this catering, man. Not usually... Chicken butter masala, and there's steamed rice, but I don't know that I'm even gonna get into that. The only utensils we got from the hotel in China, it's just some chopsticks and a little mini spoon for stirring coffee.
I usually carry a titanium spork around with me, but it gets confiscated every couple months, and then I forget to buy another one. I've used two pens, an ID card, my bare hands, whatever it takes.
See, it's perfect. That spoon is...
Yeah.
For this meal, silverware was optional.
It's good?
Not the cleanest option, but fortunately we were in an Airbus, and we had the tray table. We feasted for half an hour. We shared and tried everything.
Yeah. It's
good.
It's like spicy, like ricotta cheese.
Yeah.
I want to try some of the other things, too.
I've got to remember CCU has the best catering for the future. Consider it noted.
We're eating Indian food over Central India.
The food. Always the food. Maybe it was Bourdain, an ever-present fixture on my TV through the early years of ferrying planes, who taught me that the fastest way into a place is through what's on the plate. I don't need the monuments or the tour. Just feed me what the locals eat, and for a moment, I'll understand where I am.
What are the odds that we're both going to be in the bathroom at the same time?
Thank you.
Here's the crew Bentley.
Oh, Rolls Royce, sir.
Oh, yeah, Rolls Royce. Even better. Are we really getting into Rolls Royce? Door opens the other direction. Sick. There's stars in the ceiling. Did you notice the stars in the ceiling?
It's very romantic. As if we didn't just spend enough time together.
I think I need a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, put that on your shopping list.
Avery was asking what I wanted for Christmas.
Muscat, Oman, flanked by blue water to the north and east, rugged mountains to the south, and a barren desert to the west, the city is topographically diverse and breathtakingly beautiful. Her people practice Ibadism, a form of Islam that is tolerant, modest, and moral. Omanis are welcoming and proud, and the country has only been open to tourism for the last 50 years. Once a maritime empire, the Omani coastline is dotted with forts and ancient watchtowers. It was a trading center, bridging Africa, Asia, and Europe. For this project, Oman would once again serve as a bridge between Asia and Europe, but this time for a tired ferry crew eager to power down our jet and head for the comfort of a warm bed.